welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by Ronald J. Martin, Travis Piper. Boys, we have some business to take care of, as usual. Pipe, I'll let you get to that in the moment. And then we have three things on tap today, none of which I really care about, to be honest. But
maybe that's the magic ingredient for a great podcast, is not giving a crap.
Dude, you know what, guys? I don't know. Yeah, go ahead, Ted.
There's only like four things in the world I actually do care about, though. So most of what we talk about, it ends up being interesting somehow, man.
Big T, that's fascinating. I'd like to hear about those four things before we continue, because I'm telling you right now, boys, it's going to be hard to top that last podcast. That was definitely one of our greatest hits before we
released.
Boys,
first of all, it feels like we just did that thing, man. It feels like you said, Big R off the air, it feels like that was about 20 minutes ago. So I don't know that we can recapture that energy. I want us to take that pressure off ourselves right now.
It never works to try to relive an experience. It always falls short. So like everyone has to be a new experience.
Absolutely. So guys, let's not try to make this app like the last app. It was magical. It was a particular time and place in our lives where the planets aligned and we just did some great radio. And by that, I mean three guys talking into their computers in different towns.
We did have somebody comment online that they think it's awesome that you constantly talk about this like it's an in-studio radio show.
Pipe, listen, you got to sell the dream. That's what media is all about.
I was in full agreement with them. I think it is great.
I think it is too, man. I think it's great that we're doing this. I think that it's great that we're doing it a full 20 minutes after we just wrapped our last ep. and I think it's great that despite the fact that I don't care about any of this stuff, man, it always works out somehow. So that's hats off to you guys on that.
And what would it look like if it didn't work out? I think that's the big question that I want to know. Like, if this doesn't work out,
Ted would just
stop
talking. I think,
dude, back in the Trogues era, man, I would stop talking for like a half hour at a time and start opening my mail or like eating a snack, you know. And I'm not saying that's this not working out. It was just it was working out in a different sort of way, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's because a potential like jailbird was like hosting the podcast. I mean, what else could you expect from something like that? You know,
Trogues was in a downward spiral. He was dealing with some of his own things, and that's okay, man. That's fine. I was reading my mail. He was dealing with things.
What do you get in the mail? Like, I don't ever get anything in the mail that's worth reading.
Dude, that's the thing. It was literally just like
junk mail.
Box, you know,
like,
you just
Blue Cross Blue Shield sent me a statement. I'll take a closer look.
Dude, right. I mean, it was like, you know, one out of every 10 things you end up actually opening and looking at, and the other nine go into the trash.
Did you know that you're pre-qualified for up to $15,000 in credit?
Dude, exactly.
Pipe, it's where Big T does, like, he like completes his syllabus for 2017, you know, during these podcasts, you know.
Dude, I've done it, man.
I would love to see what a Ted Kluck syllabus looks like. because what we get on this show does not strike me as the professorial side of Ted. So
yeah,
I'm really fascinated what the what that side looks like.
Piper, I actually said
all kidding aside, I need to Skype you guys into a class someday, and we can tangentially make it about media or you know, podcasting or news or whatever. We'll come up with some like half-baked reason to have you guys into my
Shoot,
class.
I'm 2 hours away. I'll just drive over. Ronnie would have a bit of a road trip, but I can be
Dude,
there.
Yeah, seriously,
I can be there in less than 3 hours.
Absolutely, man. We should do that. We should for sure do that in the fall. Big R, you're invited. I know you won't make it down, but maybe we can.
Yeah, but Big T, remember, I mean, tell Piper about the time that I sat in on one of your classes when you were at Cornerstone in Grand Rapids.
That's right, man. I forgot. Yeah. So
I was there. So Piper, I got to see it. I got to see Ted in action with the kids. I don't know if he taught them anything or if they talked about creative writing. I think he was just like making jokes for like 45 minutes and the kids loved him. I mean, it literally had nothing to do with anything, but the kids loved him. And
I think it's not all that different than this program.
I was going to say, it's a commentary for what we're doing right now. It doesn't matter what we say, how we say it, what we're talking about. It just matters that people like us.
Okay, boys, I'm a one-trick pony. I'm a self-contained, you know?
So, Ted, are you a lots of little projects or, like, one big master project professor? Like, do you put all of the eggs in one basket, or is it lots of little stuff that
you Dude, it totally depends on the class. Here's how it tends to go. For, like, the 100-level kind of basic journalism classes, it ends up being lots of little projects. So a story here, a story there. But for the higher-level ones – like a creative nonfiction class or magazine and feature writing, it tends to be, you know, just one or two sort of big projects.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I I always hated the bigger projects classes because I really like I'm a procrastinator, and those things always pit me in the butt. To be sure,
dude. To be honest, though, those
are completely honest.
Those classes are the funnest, though, because it's the kind of writing that's the most personal to people. So I think if you...
That's true. I never took any classes like what you teach. Mine were always like theology classes and stuff. And those projects are like, here's a 32-page paper with lots of footnotes.
I think those projects are called the worst. Yep. That's what we call the worst.
Yeah, those projects are called Find a Different Calling.
Boys, you know what would be fun for a remote app would be for you guys to come down here and just like audit one of my classes. And we could... You know, just let the cameras roll in class, man. People could learn a little journalism, creative nonfiction while they listen to the program. So
you know what, man? A 20-hour round trip for the rant just sounds perfect for me.
It really does, man. Yeah.
Especially because it pays so well.
What's that?
I said especially because it pays so well.
Oh, yeah.
That's
for sure.
What I mean.
Very lucrative. Yeah. Speaking of, boys, I don't want to let this slide, and I don't want the listeners to forget about it. Live in Louisville, still a thing. Still in high-level media negotiations with venues.
And to be clear, this isn't a joke. Like, we joke about it, but it's actually going to happen, and there really are conversations trying to pin down all of the necessary details so we can create a good experience.
Absolutely. October 23rd-ish in Louisville. Several hipster coffee shops in the running to be our venue.
But since they're hipsters, they refuse to try super hard to get us there. They're
acting very nonchalant because that's what you do when you're a hipster. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You
that's part of the magic of it, right? They can't commit. Effort. They can't commit to anything.
Yeah.
No, something better might come along, man. Right? They've got to keep their options open.
Yeah. Something more obscure than a free podcast could come along.
Exactly.
That they could host.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully, Lord willing, October 23rd in Louisville, mark your calendars. It will be the radio event of the century. There will be swag, allegedly, from Missional Wear, although we don't know.
Although we've seen some photo evidence that it is in the works.
We got a very cryptic email from Missional with some swag mock-ups that we were very excited about as a company. And we will keep you abreast of that. But Pipe, tell us about the actual business that we have in hand this week. So this podcast project continues to take off like a rocket ship. If it were stock, I would buy.
Kind of like one of those rocket ships you buy at a toy store and build in your basement and then shoot, 120 feet in the air.
Dude, those are the best, aren't they? I was just talking to somebody about those, man. You got them at like the drugstore. And yeah, you just put them together and like shoot them off in the back. You remember these, Big R? Do you ever have one of these?
Ronnie.
Baby, this seems to fit nicely with the...
I don't know. It's not... I don't like fireworks and fire and stuff like that.
No, it's not a fireworks thing, man. It's more of like a 1980s like science project sort of thing. Which would seem to fit with Stranger Things. It goes along with
building models, except this was a model that you could shoot into the air, kind of.
If they had a scene on Stranger Things, you would know what we were talking about, and you would think it was sweet. But I'm not
a model guy. I'm just not like a model guy either. That's kind of my problem.
I mean, you are a model guy, but but that's something slightly different.
Pipe, he's not getting it, but it's okay. You know what, Big R, we love you anyway, baby. Pipe, take care of some business for us, and then let's get into these
pressing
guys. I'm trying to sermon prep right now. That's why I'm.
Ted asked you the question, the reason you were silent is because you weren't listening. Let's be honest,
dude. Seriously, what were you doing? Full disclosure.
What?
What were you doing in the background when I asked that question,
dude? I can't, like, I'm trying to find a better connection because you guys are breaking up on me. So that's what I was doing. I was trying to actually prepare some more Youthberry tea. If I can just be honest right now with you guys, can I?
I don't hear any clinking glass or anything, so I'm.
Baby, what's your age currently? What year are you down to? Are you down to like 26 right now? How are you feeling?
No, I'm at 17, which means you guys just got an email with a consent form to let me like be on the podcast for the next like 4 episodes. So I hope that's okay.
He's only 17.
Winger, remember Winger?
Unfortunately, I don't, because I wasn't allowed to listen to bands like Winger. But Big T, I'll live that through you right now that I'm old and wiser, and I'll be good with that. Honestly, I'm good with that.
You're younger, old, and wiser. That's what I love about it.
Cherry pie.
That's Warrant, baby. That's
goodness.
You're in the wheelhouse, though. Definitely.
Winger, Warrant. Is there really a distinction if we
No, they had all the same members. It's like DC Talk and the Newsboys, you know, just depending on what city they were in.
Gosh, 1987 was a horrible year for everyone involved in life and the music industry.
Dude, music industry maybe, but the Twins won the World Series that year, so that was
wow. Cool. That just, he just popped off with that. He just literally popped off with that. That's amazing.
Twins won the World Series. WrestleMania 3 at the Pontiac Silverdome. So NFL strike.
So maybe those made up a little bit for the down music year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe what Big R, I'm gonna push you on that a little bit. What were you listening to in 1987?
So in 87 for me it would have been New Order, Depeche Mode, and like the Pet Shop Boys.
You know? You were that guy, man.
I was absolutely. That guy. Yep. I was European guy from California.
European, yeah. Lots of black clothing.
Shaded head on one side, hair flopped over on the other side. Basically what kids look like literally today.
Exactly. Yeah. So your look has changed not a bit.
Not one, except I put a lot more stuff in my hair and I'm on a podcast now. Other than that, life is identical.
You wear more colors now, I believe. Don't you? Than just black?
You know what, Pipe?
Shades of grays and blues and things. Maybe some earth tones.
Yeah, I mean, I do. My skinny jeans are typically dark blue and I wear like, you know, black or like dark shirts. So yeah, I mix it up. My shoes get colorful too. I wear like wacky Adidas and, you know, Chucks and stuff. So yeah.
So by colorful, we mean dark blue and black. So baby, be careful riding that BMX bike at night at dusk in Ashland.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, compared to 1987, dude, I'm like a veritable
rainbow.
I'm like a circus animal right now, you know?
Pipe. Take us
all right, business. Yes. We have a sponsor who is Nav Press / Tyndale House Publishers. They are kind of one in the same. The book is Next Door as It Is in Heaven by Lance Ford and Brad Briscoe. And it's a look at kind of looks back at how neighbors and neighborhoods used to be when people knew each other, you know.
In 1987.
Where everybody knows your name and all that kind of – it sort of has a Cheers feel to it in terms of like even just the way the descriptive copy was written, because it literally says where everybody knows your name, which,
dude,
which made me laugh.
Cheers is the best, man. It's what I watch when I can't sleep.
Cheers was pre-me. Like it was
okay. – Yeah.
I kind of came of age during the Seinfeld Friends era. So
that makes sense, man. That makes sense.
But I suspect that if I had been a little bit older when Cheers was on, I would have really liked it. But anyway, so Lance Ford, Brad Briscoe, both of them are part of Forge America and Centralized, two missional leader training and church planting networks. And that's kind of the gist of the book, is kind of reteaching people how to be neighbors and how to reemphasize hospitality, not just in sort of the hosting parties, because they call that sort of friendly hospitality or party hospitality, but the kind that actually cares for people, that invites people in need into your home, that merges lives with your neighbors, which especially in suburban America is pretty anathema these days. So all of that and how that then brings the gospel, brings the church, brings the kingdom into the neighborhood. So it falls in the category of a lot of books that we've talked about on this podcast, where your neighborhood, your block is your mission field. And that's the gist of it. But these guys have been training people in this and have been doing this for a long time. So the book, again, is Next Door as It Is in Heaven, Living Out God's Kingdom in Your Neighborhood by Lance Ford and Brad Briscoe from Tyndale House Publishers and Nav Press. I believe it's available now, so you guys should go pick that up.
I thank you for that, man.
Absolutely.
It sounds fabulous.
And if Ronnie stops talking on the podcast, it's because he's on Amazon ordering that book right now.
I literally am doing that right now. I'm kind of hoping we get some free copies, but I'm going to order if I have to.
Yeah,
you know,
they don't send us a lot of free copies.
We don't get a lot of free copies on this.
I've noticed that. What's the deal with that?
You know what I get? I get PDFs of books, which is the worst.
Oh, that sucks.
Like, yeah, I don't do that.
PDFs
are
not even – what am I going to do? Print off 320 pages on my HP LaserJet? No thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what PDF stands for. I just don't click on it, open it. I mean, I need something in my hands. You know what I mean?
We're vintage on this program. We need the old school.
Something bound.
I need paper.
Paper. Absolutely.
Yeah. Babe. I need trees to, you know, basically suffer for my reading habits.
Avarice. Your book.
There you
avarice.
Go, Ron. There you go, getting political again. So
I know.
Let's use that as the segue, because, you know, Big R is nothing if not opinionated and polarizing and political on this program. Let's dive right into this thing, boys. So what do we think about this? Is it okay for pastors to be politically vocal on social media, even though they're not supposed to be in the pulpit? So conventional wisdom says, don't get political in the pulpit. Don't use the pulpit to, influence your flock one way or the other politically. But it seems like a lot of these dudes are all over social media doing that self same thing. So, what's our take on that? Big R, you're a man of the cloth, resident pastor here on the program. What do you say about this?
Dude, I don't know, because it's just something that struck me. I was talking to Pipe yesterday, and I was like, what about this? You know, like, because, you know, it's the whole thing where you're not allowed – like by law, right? You're not allowed to be political behind the pulpit because you could lose your you know, your nonprofit stuff. Well, how does that work? Yeah. I mean, I don't even know, you know, but like, I was always raised to say, to know that, like, to understand that pastors weren't allowed to like talk about, you know, who they're voting for and all this. And like at the churches I grew up at, they'd always hand out like these little manuals that told you who to vote for, you know, because
really?
Oh yeah. Because the pastor wasn't allowed to like, you know, open up his trap about it. Yeah.
So really, then like, it was really just a business card with the word Republican on it though.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, it's literally
it's
all
a short pamphlet.
That's
you're
right.
Saying.
The single word with a period at the end, Republican. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, I mean, it was like, so there was like that whole thing with it. And then it just dawned on me as I'm like, you know, scrolling down my Twitter feed and seeing like all these dudes riffing incessantly about, you know, about Trumpy and all that stuff. And I just thought, wait a minute. If they're not allowed to do it behind a pulpit, are they allowed to get online and do it? Or are the two things just separate? Like, so I guess my question is that's my question. I don't know. What, Piper, do you got any insight into that?
Well, I mean, I suspect that legally there's a significant difference because one is using an institution and the other is, you know, freedom of speech issues.
Right.
But that's kind of boring. So,
yeah. Let's talk about it from more of like a personal
dude. Who's
level.
Getting super political online? Like who are these guys? Some names
this,
that I would know.
This election, well, every gospel coalition pastor,
dude, everyone
is making political statements. But here's the thing: it's what has drawn them out this election is the fact that our political candidates are one of them overtly supports Planned Parenthood,
yeah,
and the other one is a racist, misogynist cheat who is just a jerk to everybody. So that when you're dealing with real profound moral issues, I think it draws even the apolitical pastors out. Like I am not a political person. I don't enjoy politics. When people get all riled up about them, I'm inclined to walk away. But I have a lot of thoughts on this political season because it's unfathomable to me that either of these idiots would be president. And so, and I think that's kind of what's drawn them out this time. Now, it was different when it was, you know, I don't even remember who ran against Obama either time. I think one of them was.
They were that unremarkable.
Yeah. I mean, one of them was McCain, and then I don't remember who the other one was.
It was like Walter Mondale.
Yeah. Just Bob Smith.
Yeah. It was Mitt Romney.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. See, unremarkable. Although Romney would probably run away with this election because he has a head on his shoulders, unlike the other two. But when those guys, I think you saw a lot less of it then because it was just a much less kind of immoral, amoral, contentious thing. But it is an odd thing to see them getting. To see pastors getting very political. What I've noticed, though, is that they're not getting political, at least the ones that I follow, getting mm-hmm. political along party lines. They're getting political about the
issues.
Absurdity of the candidates on issues. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Now, Pipe, do you think part of that is because, and Big R, you can chime in on this too, sort of along the lines of these guys, like, reading the naval biographies, et cetera. Don't you think they all kind of fancy themselves like leaders of men, you know, and they think, well, if the whole pastoring thing hadn't worked out, I might have gone into politics. I had a convo at one point. This was years ago with a now very prominent GCO type pastor. And he told me very candidly, I wanted to be president, or I could have seen myself going into like high level politics if I hadn't like become a pastor. So I think that whatever it is in the personality, you know, profile that makes you want to do one thing, maybe it makes you want to do the other thing.
Well, I think that's true. And then I also think, like you said, reading all of the war biographies and whatever, you see a lot of like sort of pining away for the leaders of yesteryear kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Idealizing the leaders of your.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm sure that some of those leaders of yesteryear were better. But you know what? I would be a better president than either of these idiots who are running right now. So that's not saying a lot. But there is sort of a sense of – there is a bit of a sense of sort of like – I don't know. Drawing on those things and being like, oh, if – what you know, Winston Churchill was rolling over in his grave kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it just – I don't know. I don't know what to make of that, but I do think there is sort of a pseudo-political expert or pseudo-historical expert sort of bent to the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think – well, first off, man, I think number one, it's really cool that we've said the word yesteryear twice and your so far on the program. I like that, man. That's old school.
That's good.
That's
radio.
Vintage. It's good vintage radio is what
good
it
vintage,
is.
Good vintage radio. Absolutely.
But I think the other thing too, man, is that it's like what I like to see is it's really interesting. Like Pipe, you've noticed this, man, because we probably follow a lot of the same guys. It's really cool to see the fire from all like the younger TGC guys as opposed to some of the older guys that are a little more like Ted's talking about, who are like in their 50s or 60s or 70s. And they have like a similar but different kind of a different kind of a take on it. You know what I mean? There's not quite as much of the fire that you see from like, I know he's not a pastor anymore, but like from an at Jared Wilson, you know what I mean? Who's just going on and on. Like just
Hang on a minute. Jay Will's not a pastor anymore?
No, he's at Midwestern. It's Midwestern Seminary now, right? Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
He heads up there for the church kind of conference and movement. And then I think he's just over a lot of their communication stuff at Midwestern.
No, no kidding. Wow, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he still probably sees himself in a church leadership
pastoral
role, and he pastored for a long time, and I wouldn't be surprised if he went back to it. But yeah, I mean, he's guys like him and there's a guy named Dean and Sarah and a lot of the guys from the ERLC and like sort of these younger.
Yeah.
I mean, the ERLC makes sense because they're actually in policy conversations, but I mean, they're just lighting Trump and Hillary up. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
it's like a full on battle scene. Just blazing away nonstop, and it's not like
that we mean a bunch of guys on Twitter,
right? Exactly. I mean, really hurting Trump's feelings.
Yeah,
oh wait,
right.
He doesn't have feelings. What's interesting is that it's a no holds barred kind of thing. I mean, it's not they're not profane about it, but they're not couching their statements and saying I would strongly caution you not to vote for her. You know, they're like he's an evil, awful, terrible person who has no business leading anyone, let alone a country. And just, I mean, they're just laying it out there. The sad thing is that everybody who follows them agrees with them, and everybody who supports Trump is not on Twitter and doesn't give a rat's behind what anybody on Twitter says or what any journalist says. There is not a single revelation that a journalist could make about Donald Trump that would change somebody's mind. He's going to get the votes he's going to get because America is full of, you know, crazy people, basically.
There it is, folks. Full of hope. And
I didn't say he was going to win. I said he's going to get the votes he's going to get. I don't know who's going to win, but either way, it's going to be a bummer.
Big R, what do you think about calling Pipe our official like political analyst on the show? I think we need titles, I think that needs to be his.
I think it does because I mean, you know, so I'm like Pipe in the sense that I don't care about politics, but my not caring about it keeps me uninformed about it. Whereas I feel like Piper's like lack of care somehow turns him to being far more informed about it than me and you, right?
Let me couch my previous statement. I care about political issues. I care nothing about political loyalty or parties. Mm. So I care about abortion. I care about some aspects of economics. Those kinds of things. You know, but I am not. I do not tie those to a party. So I'm completely baffled by people who are blindly loyal to a political party. That makes zero sense to me.
And I think that's what this is coming down to, isn't it? I mean, that's really what you're looking at when you see people that are trumping it right now.
Well, can call Donald Trump the moral choice, as one prominent reformed guy did recently.
Yes.
then yeah, you're clearly blindly loyal to something, because it takes blindness to call him a moral, anything.
Yeah.
Mm. Boys, you know what else is vintage? I'm ready to be done talking politics.
Amen.
Why? It's been so stimulating.
And it's such an uplifting, happy conversation.
It's such really a great follow-up from our last Greatest Hits episode. It's just been fantastic.
Our listeners are like, what did these guys do? It's like a country band who decides to go do rap or something.
I know. It really is.
Dude, it's like when Carmen did rap in the early 90s.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no. Carmen never did anything good. Except for the Champion. Was that the name of it? The one where he's sort of like this weird spoken word drama piece about Jesus.
You just described every record, but yeah, continue.
Oh, okay. But I remember that one and recall it being spectacular.
Yeah, because you were 4 years old.
Exactly. I think, well, it's probably seven, but yeah.
I did a super sad book signing in a small town in Ohio one time at a Christian bookstore. No, it wasn't Ashland. It was even sadder than Ashland. I'm sitting at this Christian bookstore, and like there's the table full of my books, and nobody's coming in, of course. And I'm looking around, and they had a novelized version of Carmen's The Champion, which I of course bought for ironic reasons, and I think I gave it to Zach Bartles. But it had a picture of like
the best ironic dollars you've ever spent.
Best ironic dollars I've ever spent. It had a picture of like big sweaty shirtless Carmen. You know, greasy and hairy in his boxing gloves, because that was part of the theme. And it was just the most like miserable thing. I had to have it.
Dude, we are in an embarrassing industry, man. This is humiliating, embarrassing industry.
Oh, just pride.
Ronnie, I wish you could tell more stories without offending people from your days in the CCM, you know, touring world, because.
Oh, I can. And I'm not, I don't, I wouldn't, I'm not afraid about offending anybody. I mean, I was in it. I have to sort of make fun of myself in it too. So it's all good. Whatever you want to know, boys, I'm all about it.
We may have to do a dedicated episode to Ronnie's CCM experience, because I don't think listeners realize just how absurd the world of Christian music is.
Yeah, we need to pull back the veil on that pipe. Definitely,
I have become very good friends with somebody who is fairly successful in the Southern gospel world, and so Southern gospel is like the Gaithers listeners. So not like not Kirk Franklin. That's a different kind of gospel, like the Gaithers in that world. And this guy is exceptionally cool, and you would never have placed him in that world. But getting to know some of the inner workings of all of that, it makes my head spin. It is a strange, and I would say strange and wonderful, but it's more like strange and horrific place.
Strange and horrific. You know what? That will be a treat for our listeners. we'll do that. We'll do that soon. I love it. Big R, are you good with that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I can tell you some stories about some guy. You know, here's the thing, right?
Redacted.
It's no, not at all, man. It's funny because the industry is no different than like the general market. You know what I mean? Music industry in general is just preposterous. Like the things you have to do, it is all Spinal Tap at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Yeah. But here's the thing. But in the Christian industry, it's like Spinal Tap if they were playing at a youth group. You know what I mean? So you have to add that component to it. So it just heightens the ridiculousness of it a little bit more. But dude, it's all ridiculous. I mean, you're standing up on a stage singing a weird song to kids at the end of the day.
What percentage of your gigs were those youth group gigs? Because all the bands did them. I mean, that was kind of standard in the business back then. But like what percentage of your gigs would you say you're rolling into a church? You're playing the multi-purpose room or the gym where the acoustics are terrible.
Or the parking lot if it's like a summer festival.
The parking lot. What percentage were these youth group gigs?
Yeah, so like the first 10 years, it probably was about like 85%. And then the last 10 years, because all that stuff has died, like, you know, bands don't play youth groups anymore. No. So then the last 10 years, it really got down to just very like occasionally, you know, and it would be a gig just that, you know, you would do to fill in. And they, you know, sometimes those gigs would actually, you know, pay really well. So you would do those to flesh out other things. But yeah.
Got it.
But you know, okay. So here's the thing, though. So like, we try not to be snobby about that, though. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's this kind of this thing where it's like, oh, if I'm playing to a bunch of kids, that's somehow less legitimate than if I'm playing in some club. It's like, well, no. What's the difference? I mean, like, it's just those kids will just go to the club. It doesn't matter.
Dude, an audience is an audience.
An audience is an audience. Yeah, absolutely. So that was always where I came. Like, I don't really care. We'll play anywhere. Yeah. So whatever.
Baby, that's fascinating. That's a little teaser, folks.
There it is.
For Happy Rant, the music industry episode, which will be
the Joy Electric special,
forthcoming.
Yeah, tell you about all my time with Kevin Max and the guy from Audio A backstage, hanging out. You know, kicking.
Maybe the excess, the decadence.
Diet Coke and the carrot cake.
Oh, flowing, my goodness.
Flowing like mud.
Oh, baby, it's gonna be that's an episode you don't want to miss. It's going to be like Behind the Music.
Diet Coke and carrot cake. It sounds like my grandmother's house.
You know, we need to put that on the rider for Live
in Louisville. Grandmother's house. I want to live there.
Carrot cake is disgusting, Ronnie.
I love it.
I love it too, Big Gong.
Vegetables and dessert do not go together.
Carrot cake is absolutely delicious.
Maybe if you had double case carrot cake.
But if I could have a piece right now, I might get in my car and drive straight to Jackson or wherever.
Maybe it's
that's how we can get Ronnie to come down for your class. Just you tell like, double K. We will pay you in carrot cake.
You know what I think is my running mate? I think Double K should actually she should be good for a carrot cake or two during the campaign.
She can do all the craft service for the two of us.
Absolutely. Dude, I would love, you know what? And I'm just going to throw it out there as sort of a hint. I mean, yeah. I would love it. I would love for Double K to bake a carrot cake, cut a nice piece, and ship it to, to Ashland, Ohio. I'd be opposed to that, man.
I'm sure it would hold up well on the shipping. You'd make that happen.
Carrot cake usually holds up like super well.
Oh, you could. It's like your hair. You could hit it with a Louisville Slugger. It's not going anywhere.
In my experience, it's the most well hold upable of all cakes.
It really is the most resilient of all cakes, isn't it?
Absolutely. It is the most resilient. Right.
Baby, me and Dub are like freebasing Stranger Things right now, man. Are you in Double M? Like, are you guys done with that?
Oh,
like,
dude, yeah. We finished up like on Sunday. We wrapped.
Who's your favorite character?
Dude, you know what, man? I really like, I like the sheriff. I like Hopper.
Love the sheriff, man.
Hopper for president. And I love, I love the main kid. I think he's cool. You know, I like him and I like the girl a lot. So
Yeah, me too, man. I like the weird kid that takes the pictures too.
Dude, it's a strong cast. There's
it
no
really
doubt
is.
About. Yeah. Dude, even what about Wynonna? Like the big comeback.
Dude, it's funny about Wynonna, and KK and I have talked about this ad nauseum, man, but she's doing a really good job. I like her, but I think at some level her character is the least developed. Like you always, the only thing you ever see her doing is like screaming and being crazy.
She's just screaming and crying and being crazy. That's all.
Yeah. So she's the least nuanced of all the characters, which is
I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree.
But
yeah, me too.
Yeah, I miss her. I really appreciated her run in A Little Women 20 years ago. That was my favorite.
Dude, she was great in the 90s, man. All kidding aside, Wynonna was a staple of 90s.
If she just could have not like gone on that like reign of stealing terror in like department stores, we'd still have her. She'd still be an A-lister.
Dude, in a weird way, that almost just made her more interesting. You know what I mean? Because it's so weird, but it's not on the scale of weird like bad things. It's not that shocking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it made her interesting, but like nobody will give her a job until Stranger Things.
That's true, man. That's
maybe
true.
That's the Stranger Thing. The Stranger Thing is that Wynonna is working in Hollywood again.
Absolutely, man. And another strange thing, boys, is that Drisky is working in ministry again. If I could draw that.
He's the Wynonna of the pastorate.
He's the Wynonna Ryder of the pulpit.
He worked
many
so well
ways.
In the early
2000s. Big T, that will go down as the greatest transition in podcasting history that you just made. I'm claiming it, man. I'm claiming that one.
Baby,
that
this is why I love radio. And it's why I love the program, because you think you're exhausted from doing a great show 2 days ago and then having to turn around and do it again. But you always find it. You find the other gear. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So this is a segment, boys, that we like to call Drisky Business. It tracks the career of one Mark Driscoll, who, like Wynonna Ryder, was big in the 90s and disappeared for a little while for various reasons.
His were a little bit more explainable, however. It's a little bit easier to say why he disappeared as opposed to Wynonna.
Yeah. That's true. Pipe, for the audience, if people aren't familiar, can you just nutshell for us why he disappeared?
Because he Hold on a second. I pulled up his website and it started playing a video automatically.
Does it lay it out? Does it say why he disappeared on the website? It actually goes there.
There's a tab called "Why I Disappeared."
The short version is that he made a number of poor leadership choices at his church. None of them, the sort of immoral choices that will that people generally associate, like having an affair and things like that. That people generally associate with a pastor's fall, but like. Some bordering on dishonest, some very heavy-handed, some accusations of abuse, and then some like verbal abuse, and then some things came out that early on in his pastorate he, under an assumed name, said some really awful things to and about people in the church in online forums. Why a pastor's in an online forum, I don't know. There was some questions about using church resources to promote his books, which, again, were part of the ministry, so it wasn't an illegal thing, but more like a question of integrity. Yeah. And so all of that sort of just ended up piling up brick by brick until the whole thing sort of crumbled. And so his very large church in Seattle, Mars Hill, is now gone completely. And it's been folded. What was left of it has been folded into another church pastored by a guy named Jeff Vandersteld, who's doing a really, really good job sort of caring for those people and helping them. But Driscoll just disappeared for a couple years and is now planting a church that will be opening the day before this podcast releases, actually, in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Interesting timing, you guys. I mean, vis-a-vis our podcast, I wonder if he planned it that way.
Oh, I think there's no question about that. There's no
question. Two media giants, us and Frisky.
Do you think we're getting played? Do you think he knew this and just pulled the levers? Like, we are the puppets on the string here?
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. I mean, why else would you launch a church on the Sunday before we drop our new episode?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. It's it seems suspicious. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Boys, what do you make of this, man? Drisky launching the new church. Big R, you saw the building itself and had some comments off the air about the aesthetic. So, Big R, again, you and Drisk are like colleagues, both being men of the cloth. What do you make of this?
I don't know. You know, I caught some videos that he did, and he's been like posting these videos on sort of the buildup to the launch. And so they bought this really old school, like round, mid-century modern, super like Logan's Run, futuristic looking like church building that looks like it built back in the 60s or 70s or something. And they just completely went inside. They bought it. They gutted it. I think it was his wife's Grace's dad's old church. That's the whole deal with it. So they're able to acquire the building, gut it, get it all ready. And he's just been sort of doing sort of this video, you know, kind of timeline thing where he's been, you know, kind of building up and promoing everything they got going until they launch this Sunday. So I don't know what to think. You know, I mean, I got people that live in the area next to him and they're saying, you know, there's not a lot of talk about it. It's not like it's the biggest thing in the neighborhood. It's not like something where like every time you walk into some coffee shop, that's all anybody's riffing about. It's like, it's not like that. He said, it's just, you know, he doesn't really know what to make of it. And that it's definitely not something that's like capturing the neighborhood or the city. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to think about it.
Pipe, what's your take on this?
Well, I think it makes total sense because everybody retires to Scottsdale. So, you know, you get to a certain point in life and ministry and you move south to the warm weather, the warm, dry air, because apparently 400-degree temperatures don't bother people who are elderly.
Maybe it's either the Villages or Scottsdale. You know, you go right or you go left.
No, I mean, it is a really interesting shift because you think Scottsdale, you don't think anything akin to Seattle. I mean, he was sort of the Seattle ethos through and through and sort of prided himself. And I mean, he grew up in the area, you know,
totally.
Tough son of a guy who hung drywall and those kinds of things. And so the whole like the screaming pastor ethos was there because that was the only way to get through to the sort of disaffected, grungy hipster crowd and, you know, the man boys and all that. And now he's going to a community of like families and retirees. And even if you just look at the website, you're like, well, that looks like a church for families and retirees. Like everything looks sort of clean cut, and it's. I'm really interested to see if he changes his tone and style, or you know, like is he still going to be the screaming angry guy? Is he gonna? Will that work there, or has he changed? Is he putting on an act? Like, what's different and why? I'm really interested to see how this all.
Yeah, plays well, Pipe. Out. Here's the thing, man. I mean, he's not been really the screaming angry guy in a long time. I mean, even like his last couple of years up in Seattle. I mean, he had mellowed out a lot. Like when you hear him talking now, I mean, he is just so mellow. It's all about family. He just talks about his wife and his kids and how the church is a family. And he's like a spiritual father now. That's how he views himself. So there's none of this teenage 20s like angst about Driscoll. I mean, and, you know, truly he's in his mid 40s now. So why would there be? But like he's really just like mellowed out his persona a lot.
And people grow and change. And I get that. I'm not skeptical of that as a reality. It is disorienting, however. I mean, it's to use an analogy, it's like watching Michael Jordan in the early 90s and then taking a break and watching Michael Jordan for the Washington Wizards. Like, those are not the same basketball player, even though it's the same person. And I kind of wonder if that's what's going to happen with Driscoll here. It's just like age and experience has taught him how to do things differently. I mean, I hope it works. I am concerned about the fact, and I say concerned not in a judgmental way, more like in an ignorant way, concerned because I don't know. The thing that I have not seen from him is public acknowledgement of the damage that was caused and how that has been cleaned up. Now, I don't know what's happened behind the scenes, and that may have been handled well there, but when a public minister has a public fall, I feel like there should probably be a public addressing of that, but I don't have any right to tell him what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that he brought Michael Jordan into a big T, what do you have to say about all this, man?
Dude, I will say vis-a-vis Jordan, you know, the Wizards era Jordan was great. He was still great, but he was great in a completely different way. And I think that's what Pipe is hinting at. You know, if there is any greatness left to be had in Driscoll, it will be a different kind of greatness, and it won't look like it did in the Seattle era. And those of us who were Jordan fans, I think we appreciated the nuance that he brought to the game in his later years. But yeah, you always miss the explosiveness of the early years. And I think, you know, to that point. There was always, I think, in the blogosphere and in just, you know, the kind of circles that would follow pastors and podcasts, there was always an element of like entertainment in Drisky, you know. Mm-hmm. We always used to say that, you know, the blogosphere back in that era was like reality TV for Christians, you know. It was the kind of thing you could dive whole hog into it and be entertained by all the controversy, but not feel like, you know, a slime ball for doing it. So, you wonder about the impact of a newer, gentler Drisky minus all the like entertainment stuff that made him sort of the train wreck that everybody wanted to look at. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the question. Is it just going to be like a modest sort of like residential kind of church, like any other church you probably find in the area, or is it just going to be explosive?
You know, maybe every church should be a modest sort of residential church. Like we say that, like it's a bad thing, but it's actually
not at all.
Thing, you know? That would be best case scenario, maybe.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like it would be hard for me to be disappointed in anything that goes on in that church unless he crashes and burns again. That would be disappointing. But even then, like I don't have high expectations, and so but it would be if he becomes sort of like the Bill Hybels Willow Creek type of church, or the, you know, like you said, the Andy Stanley type, these comfortable run of the mill, and maybe he'll preach a little bit more pointedly than those guys do or whatever. But that's really disorienting because he was the guy who was like,
he was the punk rock guy.
He was the guy who's like, he was tough guy Jesus. Like, I don't want some sissy metrosexual Jesus with long blonde hair and whatever. I mean, he was aggressive, and if he goes that route, it will completely spin my head around. I won't be disappointed. I'll just be lost.
But I think, but Piper, he already has gone that route. That's kind of what's, because really
yeah,
the people
that. Yeah,
but
if you go that route and nobody's paying attention, does it really matter?
Well, no, but I mean, the people he surrounded himself with, like post, you know, stuff and scandal, I mean, are all those kinds of people. I mean, like he's literally, here's the other thing that he's doing. He's hosting a leadership conference at the Trinity Church. So that's something they have coming up.
There's some ironic. Irony. I almost said ironicalness, which
you can call me irony.
Some irony, Martin. Some shy Ronnie in that.
Yeah. Ironicalness. Yes. No,
host a leadership conference, though. I mean, I feel like that's just kind of a standard thing to do if you've got a gigantic platform.
Yeah, which is funny because most of them have very little helpful stuff to say about leadership.
For sure.
Because the nuts and bolts of leadership are not usually involved in a platform in any way, shape, or form. But I was waiting. I was going to say before he brought up leadership conference, what is the over-under on months until the announcement comes out that he is writing a leadership lessons learned book?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, dude, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, will we see it before the end of 2016? Will it be 2017, or will he be patient enough to announce it 2017 and maybe release 2018?
Yeah, dude, I think he's going to wait.
See, I disagree, Big R. I think he announces almost immediately and then releases in 2017. That, you know, that thing's in the works, man.
Yeah.
It's probably already written by a research assistant.
Dude, yeah, somebody like Drisky with that kind of platform, that's chum in the water for our industry, man. I mean, there's people flocking to that.
People eat it up either because they want to learn from him or because they want to rake him over the coals. And either way, it's going to sell.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I wish I could accidentally sell books.
Dude, I know, right?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Have you already ghostwrote that thing for Driscoll, or where are you at with that?
Dude, you know what? All kidding aside, man, we're all, the three of us are all authors, man. Let's say this and let's end on this topically. If the phone rang tomorrow and it was Drisky's agent saying, I need one of us, you know, I need you guys to ghostwrite Drisky's book. The advance is going to be huge. He might be a douche. Would you do it? Yes or no? Do you do the gig?
I'm anti-ghostwriting in general, but okay. I mean, I'm not anti doing the writing on behalf of somebody else. I'm anti like true ghostwriting where the writer gets no
public. Well, what if it's credit. What if it's a with book?
I would have a conversation about it.
All right. Like kind of like a Chandler to Wilson kind of a scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely have a conversation about it because I had a lot of respect for Driscoll once upon a time, and I was really sad to see what happened to him. I mean, not sad, like it didn't ruin my life or anything, but just from a distance, disappointed that a man I respected, learned a lot from, had went through all that, put that upon himself, I should say, went through it, makes him sound like a victim. If I got the call, I would say, can I talk to him and find out what's really, you know, what's behind all this?
Sure.
I have a hard time imagining actually doing it, though.
Yeah, man. Interesting. Big R, what's your take?
Yeah, man. I would just ask if I could fly out to the Trinity Church and hang out and talk about just talk.
Just like figure out who he is, where he's at, all those things.
Like I'd want to come out and just go, dude, can we just like can we honestly just have an honest conversation, man, to where I can ask you questions and find out like what's going on, how you're doing, how all this stuff is on the back end now. And I would at least want to just say, hey, man, you know, I'd love to at least kind of get in your head and your heart a little bit with that stuff. You know,
it worth the controversy regardless?
I don't know. So if we had bigger platforms, I just don't know if it would affect us that much, to be quite honest.
I don't think it would, man.
Yeah.
Except in your pocketbook, it would be a huge payday.
And as we all know, those are not easy to come by when writing books.
They're not, man. They're not. That's why I would definitely take the call. I had a chance a couple of years ago to ghostwrite a book or two with a guy who had a similar huge platform, but he was known to be like a complete egomaniac tyrant. And he was sort of kind of in our space theologically, but kind of drifting out of it. And I don't know. Anyway, everybody in my life who I went to for advice said, like, run the other way, you know, as fast as you can. Don't do it for any amount of money. So I didn't do it.
You did. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, no, I didn't do it, man. I didn't do it. But I don't know if Drisky would fall into that category. But yeah, like you guys, I would definitely have the conversation for sure.
I would love to see that church thrive, and I would love to see Driscoll never on a conference platform again.
Yeah, that'd be good, man.
Like, if he could just be a really good pastor for the people who are at that church, that would be fantastic for everybody involved. Yeah. I think for him to try to regain the platform he had before, or to kind of build another one sort of in the leadership space, whatever space that looks like.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to see a lot of good coming out of that.
Yeah, dude, it worries me that he's trying to like own that space already. I think that's strange. But interesting, boys. Interesting to hear your thoughts about Drisky and Drisky business. And guys, I got to wrap this thing, man, because I got to get to something else. But as always, we have wandered to
that code. Is that code for your board?
I'm a little bit bored, but no, this has been fun, man. I mean, it's been fun, definitely. And you know, it's always good to talk with you gentlemen. So I can never be too bored doing this. But I appreciate your input and your comments as we've wandered to and fro around this thing. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.